geek. Talking baseball every week. Cause the D-Man and the Geek.
And welcome to
Cleveland and the Geek,
All Korea Edition. Anything going on this last week or so, John?
I am John Bonas of Twins Daily. With me, Aaron Cleveland of The Athletic.
It's been a busy week. Sure has. We're going to talk.
Completely hijacked.
You know anything about this Correa dude this time? We're going to talk about Carlos Correa quite a bit on this show because...
But not as much as we have.
Well, yeah.
We're going to try and do is summarize about 3 or 4 right. 6 hours of conversation.
As we always tell you, if you want immediate reactions to, well, the Twins signing some guy for $200 million, ours was like, if you want immediate reactions to them doing an extension with Chris Paddock, but this one's even above and beyond that, go to the Patreon. And sure enough, we did an immediate show about Correa signing because he actually didn't sign at 3 a.m. this time, or the news didn't break at 3 a.m. this time. So we were able to do a, you know, daytime show for the Patreon subscribers. And then in addition to that, we had Dan Hayes, my partner at The Athletic, on, who I thought just crushed the reporting from start to finish.
Yeah,
you
got an emergency podcast, and then you got something we haven't always done, which is sort of a behind-the-scenes podcast.
We go behind the scenes with Dan, which the reaction to that, I hesitate to say this because Dan's head will get too big to even walk through doors.
Disco
Danny Hayes. People are like, this is the best show you've ever done. And the variable there, it wasn't us doing it. We brought in a third person. Yeah. So if you want more Carlos Correa talk and immediate
after
reactions,
this, right.
Go to Patreon, patreon.com/Gleeman, and you can listen to the archive for free. And then if you stick around there, $1 an episode. What we're going to try to do today, because we've both now since, well, first of all, since last we spoke on this show, they've signed Carlos Correa. We're going to talk about that. But we also both attended the press conference at Target Field where Carlos Correa talked, and Scott Boras in particular revealed quite a bit of information about this whole drawn-out, insane free agency saga.
Right.
And then Derek Falvey talked, Joe Pollad talked, everybody was there. So we got a lot of little tidbits from that that we're going to talk about, you know, kind of above and beyond what it means for the Twins roster and the contract stuff itself. We're going to try to break down here so you have a pretty good sense of that. But it's one of those where you go, I don't even know where to start. So I guess I'll just start at the top here.
Yeah.
I was trying to, you know,
I don't think we need to recap the whole saga. Bottom line,
no.
Twins ended up with Carlos Correa after he was rejected by a couple
anyway,
of other teams.
Thank you to the sponsors, and we'll talk to you next week. So I was thinking, it's I don't know what day he officially signed, but it's mid-January right now, which means his initial signing with the Twins occurred 10 months ago. It hasn't even been a full year since he landed in Fort Myers, and they had the press conference for that. So go back, you know, 10 months and 10 days or whatever, just before he signed with the Twins last mid-March. The notion, and you can hear us say such things on the podcast last year, the notion of the Twins signing Carlos Correa at that point was so far-fetched that it wasn't even really on our radar in the sense that we used to joke about every offseason, people like me, and or Twins Daily or whatever, put out a list of, you know, the top 25 free agents or whatever. And we always go, all right, let's skip to number 8
and then see
where the Twins might check in. The notion that they, whether he was, you considered him number 1 or number 2 last offseason, and then I would say he was either number 1 or number 2 this offseason, maybe number 3, because it was a pretty great, with Aaron Judge and everybody.
Sure.
But just the notion that the Twins would be in the mix for that, if I would have told you 12 months ago or 11 months ago, there's going to be an article that even links the Twins to being interested in Carlos Correa. You'd have been like, oh, please. That's some PR thing. Like, they're joking with the Twins. They're making fun of the Twins. Then they sign him. And, you know, we've talked about that endlessly. Then you fast forward now, and he opts out, as expected. And, you know, you and I put it at 5% that they'd re-sign him at the beginning of the offseason. Maybe I bumped it up, but no further than, you know, 10% at any point. I would say, like, in mid – right before he agreed to – quote unquote, his deal with the Giants.
Right.
I think we said it was like 10%. Maybe you were a little bit higher, but we weren't saying 30%, 40%, 50%. And then obviously he agrees to the deal with the Giants. It falls through. He agrees to the deal with the Mets. And at that point, I'm just assuming, well, the Mets are going to figure this thing out with him. You know, it's dragging out, but also it's Christmas, it's New Year's. That throws a wrench into it from a timing perspective. I thought, well, the chances are essentially nil at this point. And so I just keep coming back to the idea that they've now signed Carlos Correa at 27 years old and then at 28 years old.
Right.
And
how bizarre that is
how
to say
strange it is
to say that out loud.
Just having covered this team for 20 years, having done this podcast now for 10 years or over 10 years, and having been a lifelong Twins fan for now 35 years.
Right.
And for you, what, 78 years you said you've been watching it? And just the concept of this even being the slimmest of possibilities, like the concept of this even being like on a radar as a possibility would not have existed in any rational thinking Twins fan's mind 10 months ago, 10 and a half months ago. And now they've done it twice. And in this case, they don't have to do it a third time, which is kind of my takeaway from this, just, you know, 10,000 feet up or whatever, is like they not only ended up with Carlos Correa for 1 year, they not only re-signed Carlos Correa for six guaranteed years. The structure of this contract is just unlike any I've ever seen at this scale, which is that it limits
the
6 years and $200 million is risky no matter what.
Right.
No matter if you want to talk about his old ankle injury, which we're going to get into, or he's the healthiest 28-year-old of all time, it would still be an incredibly risky deal, especially for a team like the Twins. But
it's going to be somewhere between 20 and 25% of their payroll probably for the next –
Next, 20%, yeah, something like that.
132 is 20%, and or 20 is 25%, and 150 or 160 is
150 now. But yes, but you rarely, like, when these type of deals, and what I mean by that is, you know, 150, 200, $300 million deals are signed, the team, and we talked about this actually with the Donaldson deal a few years ago, which was only 4 years and $92 million, but we said they're not signing this Donaldson deal or fill in the blank with any deal long-term, because the team thinks that the last part of the deal is going to really pay off big for them. The opposite is true. The team, any, you know, 6 year, 8 year, 10 million, 10 year deal, they're signing it because the team thinks that the first 3 years, the first 4 years, the first 5 years, even the first 6 years are going to provide such good value relative to the money paid that whatever you get in the last 2, 3, 4, 5 years, it's going kind of gravy.
Right.
You know, you're kind of subsidizing the first part with the second part. But this Correa deal flips that on its head. Yes, there's six. I mean, look, if he's hurt immediately, you got 5.5 years and that's going to stink.
Right.
But if he struggles 4 years in, 5 years in, 6 years in, or he gets hurt 4 years in, you can hit eject after 6 years, which is huge, because the Twins' initial offer was 10 years. The Giants' offer that he agreed to was 13 years. And then the Mets' offer that he agreed to was 12 years.
Right.
And those were fully guaranteed, you know, theoretically. So the fact that they can hit eject after 6 years is huge. But then beyond that, what makes this deal, to me, really unique and really sort of, I don't know, a boon to the Twins, is that there are then four option years.
Right.
And when I first heard that, I just assumed, well, these are going to be opt-outs, or they're going to be mutual options, or they're going to be something where Correa himself can hit eject on it. Instead, the opposite is true. They are, you know, I'm sure people have seen the phrasing vesting options, which that's true. But they're really team options that can also vest.
Right.
That's the phrasing.
Yep. That's a good point.
That's incredible to have team options. Anytime you see team option, that's to the team's favor.
Right.
It gives them the flexibility. They can cut bait. They can keep around. And in this case,
and on top of that,
in this case, the salaries decline year by year. So Correa is going to make $36 million per year in the first 3 years of the deal, this year and the next 2 years. Then it's like $32 million. Then it's like $31 million, something like that. It, you know, you can do the math.
Basically $31 million the next 3 years.
Right. Then you have six. You complete the six. So 2028, I guess, would be the sixth year. The first non-guaranteed year of the deal, which is a team option, is for $25
million. Right.
So you, at that point, even you're saying, all right, he's 33 years old. He might not be the player he used to be. Maybe he's at third base. Right. Maybe he's had some injuries. But what are the odds in 2029 that he's not going to be worth $25 million? I mean, think of what $25 million gets
you. It's a three-war player.
Right, exactly. And
and a three-war player, I mean, give an example of a three-war player on the Twins this year. Polanco was probably a three-war player, right?
I mean, I'm trying to think of
Arise was three war.
More than that, probably.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, three war players in an average-ish regular.
Right.
Like, you know, right. A guy who's...
Gio Urshela was a three war player.
Yeah, that's probably about right. Yeah. Gio Urshela, right. Which, yeah.
Right.
so you don't need to be much. Then the second option year is for $20 million. Then the third option year...
It's for 15.
The ninth year of the deal right. total is for $15 million. And then the 10th year.
When, by the way, he's still only 36 or something. At that point. Yeah.
And then the 10th year of the deal, the fourth option year, is for $10 million. Now, look, there's a very strong possibility with any player at this point, any 20-year-old, that 10 years out, they're either going to be retired or they're going to be, you know, limping around to the extent that they ought to be retired, or they're just going to have lost it. Not everybody is Adrian Beltre or Nelson Cruz or whatever in terms of aging. But 10 years from now, a $10 million salary for a Major League Baseball player is not going to buy you much. I mean, it doesn't buy you much right now on the free agent
market. Not to mention.
Joey Gallo got $11
million. Right, exactly right.
You know what? Coming off a year, he hit 160, by the way.
Right.
Well, and you can argue over the soundness of that move. But that's
not to mention, it's also a team option.
Right.
They don't have to pay him $10 million. They don't have to pay him $15 million the year before or $20 the year before.
I don't believe there's even a buyout amount. I think it's just a straight-up team option that I've seen. Now, where the vesting component comes in is that those are team options. In addition to those team options for year 7, 8, 9, and 10, the four option years, Correa can
take away the team option aspect of it.
He can exercise the options on his own by reaching playing time thresholds, which for the first option year is 575 plate appearances, then it's 550 for the second one, 525 for the third one, and 502 being the number you need to qualify for the batting title for the fourth one. If he does that, they vest automatically, and the Twins, there's no decision to make. It exercises the option.
If he's healthy.
Right.
And really healthy. For reference, he had 590 plate appearances this year.
Right. But here's the thing within
that. He was basically healthy the whole year.
And then he can also vest it in the same manner by finishing in the top five for the AL MVP voting, winning in the previous year.
Right.
But that only vests one year. It doesn't vest the four remaining years. Right. So each year, if he finishes top five in the MVP, which he's only done, I think, once in his career, if he wins LCS or World Series MVP, but the Twins are going to be pretty happy if that happens, probably. Or if he wins a Silver Slugger Award, which is the best hitting shortstop in the league. Again, the Twins would be happy then. It would be a no-brainer to exercise those options. There's no scenario, let's put it this way, there's no scenario like in 2030 that Carlos Correa wins a Silver Slugger Award and the Twins go, well, we don't want him back next year for $20
million. Right.
Like what logical sense would that make? But what's interesting to me and is going to go unsaid because nobody wants to think this is going to be an issue because everybody's – it's all, you know, bunnies and duckies or whatever. This thing. We've seen before with the Twins and other teams – when there's a playing time threshold and it gets a little gnarly. I remember Jamie Carroll 10 years ago.
Yeah, I was going
to
say
the Twins signed him to a one-year deal to be their starting shortstop plus an option. And at the time, it was like, okay, he's a good shortstop. But he was 38 years old and he got old in a hurry. He couldn't play shortstop anymore. But he had a vesting option for like 500 plate appearances or something. And he had like 400 in early August.
Right.
And what do you know? He stopped playing every day.
Yeah.
And there was nothing said.
They started resting him on a pretty regular basis.
And it's going to be trickier to do that with Carlos Correa. But if it gets to a point where Carlos Correa is hitting 180, or Carlos Correa is, you know, a first baseman and hitting 240 with 10 homers, the Twins, if they would like to, now maybe
or
it causes.
Or you bat him lower in the lineup so he doesn't get anybody
that'll cost you playing appearances too.
That's right.
That's true. The Twins have the ability to control his playing time. Now, that could get a little weird, awkward, potentially.
Yeah.
But it's remarkable to me.
We always talk about how one of the criticisms we have of the Twins is, do they like great players or do they like good players with great contracts?
They got both. They got a great player on a great contract.
And we took a look at the Correa situation and said, here's a great player. Just try to get a good contract. Like the 10-285 is not a terrible contract. It's a decent regular contract. That's 10 years guaranteed. No opt-outs.
Original offer.
Yeah, right.
Their original best offer was 10 years and $285 million, fully guaranteed.
Right. I mean, again, like you said, there's always going to be risk with the $200 million contract.
I mean, look, if his ankle is as much of a risk as the Giants and Mets believe, or at least want people to think they believe, we'll get into that in a second.
But this
then seems, it's a huge risk. Right. But if Correa is healthy right now, this is just such a major victory for the Twins, to the point that somebody after the press the way it works at the press conference, I think people were able to watch it on MLB.com or whatever streaming.
Right.
You saw the four people up on stage: Joe Pollad, Derek Falvey, Carlos Correa, and his agent Scott Boras. They, you know, it was like a half hour of questions.
Right.
We passed around a microphone, whatever. And then after that, it breaks up, and then everybody just kind of goes to a corner of the room, and all the media
different corners of the room, right?
And all the media in attendance, said, "Well, who do I want to ask more questions of?" And a lot of people went to Boras. I went to Falvey. All that stuff, and one of the things Falvey said,
and someone became much more conversational.
Yes, sometimes off the record and all that stuff.
Yeah.
That's when it becomes dangerous. You think you're having an off the record conversation, then you just feel one of the television camera lights behind you, and you're like, "Oh, hope that doesn't end up on Joe Schmidt talking about." And then I also make a real effort to get out of frame,
right?
Because
right,
they did. Yes, Doogie, who works for KSDP TV Channel 5 ABC affiliate, they showed Falvey answering a question of mine, but they don't show the question, obviously. And I was about a quarter inch out of frame. Otherwise, I would have been on the news looking, you know. So I also sat where my bald spot would not be prominently featured during the press conference. It's a real consideration.
That's funny.
Because all the, if you notice, like Dan and Betsy and Doe were all in the
you're
middle.
On the right
and
side. And I was on, all on the left side. Yeah.
I was like, I don't need that. But anyway, one of the things Falvey said, someone asked him, wasn't me, afterward in the more casual element, could you ever have imagined at the beginning of this thing, A, signing him, which they didn't think they had great odds to do that. Nobody did. But signing him to a six-year deal. And he was like, no, it wasn't even – like if we would have offered him 6 years out front.
$200 million, he would have been insulted. Boris would have been insulted.
He would have
and
ended
away.
The negotiations.
Right.
I mean, he made it clear, like our initial offer, like our day one offer was significantly more than what ended up being the offer.
Right.
And so in that sense, the Twins – use the leverage that they gained by way of what the Giants and the Mets did backing out of their deals. And I don't mean that in a way like they really applied the pressure to Correa and all that, but they reassessed the situation. They knew they didn't have to leave the 10-year.
What they did is they let the Mets apply the pressure.
Right. And then they just
came in as the white knight at the end.
I think that's right.
They looked like the good guys and saved themselves $85 million and a bunch of years on it. You know, I'll also say this. You know, we talk about the risk associated with this. Well, yeah, there's a risk associated with it, not just because it's a huge number, but because you got an injury risk here, right?
Right.
There's also risk associated with a 10-year, $285 million or a 13-year deal. You know, like, is the risk greater? We talked about this with Nelson Cruz. He's 39 years old and he's hitting the snot out of the ball.
Right. At some point he will not.
And
be
2 years later,
and
you're like, yeah, but inevitably, he's going to not be that same player 3 years
from now. In the moment, nobody wants to consider that. Like everyone goes, just keep signing Cruz to 2 year deals or whatever. It's like, and sure enough, last year at 41 or whatever he was, he stopped hitting.
And Father Time is undefeated.
It comes for everyone.
There is a risk. Is the risk greater that he's going to have some ankle injury in the next 6 years, or is the risk greater that he's not going to be a very good baseball player
just
at ages 36 to 40?
Normal aging. One is inevitable.
That's my point.
And one is
debate
about it.
You can't. I think most people would be like, well, absolutely, just sign him to a 13. We weren't like that, right? We were like, listen, sign him to a 13-year deal. Make it a 12-year deal. Whatever. Just get the deal done, right? But that is – the risk associated with a decline there is 100%.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, once in a while you can beat it in that you sign a guy through age 39 and he doesn't get bad till he's 40 or something.
But it's 90%.
It's 90%.
Right. I don't think there's a 90% chance that
there definitely isn't.
that his ankle doesn't hold up for six more
weeks. Even the most pessimist, even the Giants and the Mets would tell you that there's not a 90% chance of that. I mean, the Mets would not have even offered him what they did offer him. So let's talk about that. Right now too, which became evident. In my opinion, and again, this is us reading between the lines and stuff with the information we had and the quotes on and off record that we've seen, and also Correa did a good interview last night with Ken Rosenthal at The Athletic. In addition,
Boras had
said many of these things.
But Boras had, I was surprised, first time I've ever met Scott Boras, And I've kind of heard he's a little intimidating, or he answered every question for 25, 30 minutes about everything.
You have to think, he is intimidating just because of his status in the industry. But you can't get to where he
answered
gets.
A lot of questions I thought were stupid questions, and he answered them very graciously. Let me say that.
That's right. You did ask a question during the press conference. I forgot. I didn't. But here's how I would lay out what happened before the point the Twins signed him.
Right.
Like, here's how we got to this point. How did we get here? Well, in early December, the Twins thought they had a puncher's chance. Right. They were in the mix, but it became clear that the Giants had emerged as the team to do it. And I believe it was December 14th, about 5 days after the winter meetings ended, that news broke that they signed him 13 years, $350 million.
Right.
Then a week passed. And then the next Tuesday, he was in San Francisco in a hotel room with all his family, ready to go to this press conference. And he talked to Rosenthal yesterday and said, "We were out looking for houses in San Francisco. I flew my mother-in-law, my father-in-law in there. My wife was there. Her sister.
It's time for the big celebration.
Right. And we're all going to
all go to the press conference. Right. We're all going to put on our nice clothes. Yeah. We're going to celebrate.
We're going to become Californians.
That's
now.
This is it.
And so that falls through, and it's clear now that
– and it falls through hours before the actual
– yes.
Right. Like, and they're all waiting to go to the press conference, and it falls through.
Yes. As we talked about with Dan Hayes on the Patreon podcast, that Tuesday, that same morning in Minnesota, we were at in the Twins clubhouse for the Joey Gallo signing.
Right.
And Derek Falvey found out about the Giants – canceling the press conference from Dan Hayes, who said as soon as Falvey walked into the press conference or into the clubhouse, "You see this Giants thing?" And Falvey was like, "What Giants thing?"
No, he didn't. He played along.
Well,
he said, "Yeah, okay. Yeah, that Giants thing."
And then
something.
He said, "As soon as I left 40 minutes later, I went up to my office and went, what Giants thing?"
he got out of that meeting and went, "What's going on with the Giants?"
Right. You're right. He did a poker face. You never want to tell Dan, wait, what?
I just love that. Falvey just played along.
Yeah.
So, as if he knew what was going on.
Well, right. Because if you tell Dan that, then the next day in the Athletics is the oral history of how I told Derek Falvey news that he didn't know. But so it's clear now that, okay, Carlos Correa in 2014, when he was 19 years old, literally 19 years old, in single A, he was a prospect coming up. Right. He broke his right fibula. Right. I think he was sliding into second base or something. And he had surgery, season-ending surgery to repair it, and there was a plate put into his lower right leg, ankle area, to stabilize it. And he's
It sounds very similar to what happened to Sano, to be honest.
Yeah.
Wasn't that
he had a titanium rod inserted in a bigger part of his leg. But yes, since then, Correa's been on the injured list for quite a few things, actually. He's been banged up a lot, including last year he took a fastball off his hand, spent time there. He's had some back problems. He's had some wrist whatever it is with the Astros. But he's never once spent time on the injured list in 8 major league seasons or even in the minors after that. With anything ankle-related or lower leg-related. And he says he's never even missed a game for that. And the Twins said there was never even a day he came in during last season where he said, "Hey," to the trainers, "like, can you work on my ankle? It's a little sore." It's been a non-factor for essentially a decade since then. However, when you're putting him through a physical exam, which is required for all deals but certainly required extensively for a 13-year, $350 million deal, you're going to give him an MRI. You're going to give him x-rays.
Especially of areas that were previously injured.
Right. But you're putting – I mean, you're looking at everything. Right.
So they did an MRI. The Giants did an MRI.
And the MRI showed a big metal plate in his lower right leg.
We don't know exactly what it showed, but I think Boris did kind of refer to, it showed arthritis developing, which can be painful and a real problem.
So they backed out of their deal, and it sounds like said to Correa, "We'd like to kind of hold off on making this official. We need to consult more medical experts on this, and there's a possibility we can still get this thing done with different terms or whatever." At which point Boris said, "No, thank you.
Right.
We're now out of this negotiation." And within 12 hours, he had a deal with the Mets,
right?
And their owner Steve Cohen famously was having a few Mai Tais in Hawaii at the time,
right?
And signed a 12-year, $315 million deal with the Mets. Now, our assumption at that point was, well, the Mets are going into this with open eyes, right? They know what everyone else knows and more, that the Giants deal was held up because of this decade-old ankle injury. So how could – my thought was, how could the Mets even enter into this if they thought there was a possibility of holding up their deal with the same thing? But
we,
sure enough –
we should also mention the Twins found out about the Giants thing, right?
Yes.
They did – he – Falvey says he had a short conversation with Boris.
But it was clear they were pivoting immediately to the Mets.
Immediately going to the Mets. Falvey did not know anything about what had really happened that the Giants had.
Right. Scheduled. Initially, yeah.
Yeah, so, yes, right. So while he was, you know, by the time he had signed with the Giants, the Twins were still at the point where they were like, but what's with the ankle? Like, why is there something so serious that?
Well, and also at that point, if you remember, you know, everybody on Twins Twitter and people were going, well, why don't the Twins just swoop in and increase their offer?
Right.
Meanwhile, the Twins are thinking, A, why would we do that?
Why is everybody scared of this? Right.
We need to find out what's going on with this ankle. But there was no time really to do that. He signs with the Mets, and then what happened was over the next 3 weeks, basically, the Mets then gave him a physical, looked at the same
within
MRI
a couple days,
right. Found the same thing because his ankle didn't change any, and then proceeded to back out of the deal.
And one detail that we have learned since.
Yes, Correa told Ken Rosenthal yesterday, and Boris made sort of mention of this, which is that
– and we asked Falvey about it too, by the way.
The same orthopedist or whatever, specialist.
I think it was a surgeon, but yeah, keep going.
That evaluated the MRI for the Giants and ultimately told the Giants this is a problem, was then brought in by the Mets to evaluate the same MRI. And, outcome are you going to get that's different there?
We asked Falvey a little bit about that. I think one of the – because we were kind of keying in on that.
Right.
And basically he said, well, you know, there are – he says it's not uncommon that teams use the same doctors.
Right.
Right? Because – it's like, by the way, Dr. J, what Dr. Who takes
Dr.
care
James
of the ace?
Naismith?
Yeah.
He's created basketball.
Who's the guy who takes care of Joby or something who takes care of the, right? I mean, everybody goes to the specialist in that area, right? So this is a, everybody kept going to the same specialist.
They're using the same MRI in a lot of cases, too. That Giants MRI is just getting passed.
Right, exactly.
I mean, if it's agreed upon, that's an accurate MRI.
That is what happened.
But that, to me, is an amazing detail because that reveals, in my opinion, again, this is just speculation. That reveals, in my opinion, that either the Mets, maybe they entered into this whole thing righteously, or maybe they didn't ever.
Right.
But at some point, they decided either we made a mistake here, we want to back out, which a good way to do that is just to bring in the same medical expert who let the Giants back
out. In the same
way,
if you're buying a house, you have a home inspection, you just say, you know what?
Right.
Yeah.
Or
we're flagging this.
No, and I think this is actually a worse look potentially for the Mets. They realized a week into this thing, we don't have to back out. We can now have all the leverage because Correa doesn't want another deal backed away from.
Right.
Correa doesn't want to go back out onto the open market. It's now been a month since he signed with the Giants. There's egg on everyone's faces. His market is completely cratered if he does go back onto the market. We can kind of turn the screws here a little bit. And it turns out, it was revealed by John Heyman of the New York Post, they're – best offer, quote unquote, to Correa after 3 weeks of trying to work this thing out was to guarantee exactly 50% of the $315 million they offered him, which is $157.5 million, and, you know, quote unquote, give him a chance to earn the other $157.5 million through a series of playing time thresholds like the Twins have, through a series, though, of post each season, he would then have to pass a physical to sort of open the door for the next season.
Right.
And if at any point he doesn't pass that physical, it cancels the rest of the contract. Well, here's what we know about the Mets. They're willing in the physical process to bring in a guy who flunked them from the Giants.
Right.
So if you're Carlos Correa, you're thinking, well, aren't they just going to do that as soon as they don't want to keep paying me?
Yeah, it's the team option aspect that the Twins essentially have, except that there's no vesting.
Right. They also, by the way,
you don't have to pass the physical if you get 575 plate appearances.
It's just a perpetual team option because they can at any point put subjectivity into a medical physical, which you can do. There is it's not cut and dried always. It's not black and white always. So Boris's point ultimately in all this, and he spoke about this at the press conference afterward, and Correa is talking about this now, is he's not saying that the MRIs were wrong. The MRIs show what they show, which is a 9-year-old injury, and there could be some, you know, deterioration around it or future.
Well, and the important point here is that after he had that surgery, there was no post-surgery MRI.
Right.
Right. 9 years ago. And in fact, because he's not had any problem with his ankles.
Right. There's been no reason to further.
There hasn't been an MRI any time in between. So one of the things that you know, was asked was sort of like, okay, he's never, yes, the MRI looks like he's got something wrong there, right? That's what it looks, that's what the MRI looks like. But he moves fine. He's reported no pain. He's never been had an injury with it. Is the situation here that it just got a lot worse here in the last year or two? Well, nobody has any idea. Right. It might have, that MRI might have looked exactly that way 9 years ago.
Right. Or 5 years ago.
Right.
It might just be what you would call a normal.
Right. There's no way of taking a look at it and saying, well, yeah, but look, it's obviously degenerative. Right. Because look, you can see how it was five years ago or something. No, there was such, oh, suddenly we did this MRI with the Giants. It looks like there is something wrong. We've got a great story coming out on Monday. I'll tell you about it. Lucas C. Afer talks a little bit about the divide that Scott Boras kind of talked about several times in the conference, basically saying, you know, you can take a look at something like an MRI and say, well, there's something wrong here, right? Does that mean there's something wrong there? Well, some people in the medical community would say, yeah, you can see there's something wrong here, right? But other people would say, yeah, but he's working fine. I mean, we all have things wrong with us that never affect us.
It's not an easy job to hold at a premium level with an ankle that doesn't work. It would make itself apparent over the last 9 years. And yeah, that was the point that Boras made, which is that your both deals with the Mets and the Giants were squashed because of the medical opinion of someone who has never actually been in the same room as Carlos Correa.
It's okay.
That was a
just had somebody come barge.
I don't know if you guys heard that, but the guy barged in. It sounded like a surprise party for somebody.
I wonder if this is room reserved. We'll find out.
How do you not check that?
I should have checked it
every time. Yeah. Or here's a thought: reserve it yourself.
It costs money to reserve it.
Oh. Well, yeah, don't do that. Okay, but here's the point that Boras made. Was that, is there more value in having somebody who's literally never been in the same room as Carlos Correa, but examines people and knows how to look at an MRI, say, oh yeah, he's got a plate in his leg, and this could be bad. That's not a good thing to have a plate in your leg, basically.
Right.
Or is there more value in, for instance, the Twins team doctor, Dr. Chris Camp, who worked with him throughout the season and knows firsthand he had no ankle problems, or the doctor in Houston,
right,
who worked with him for 7 years and never at any point told him to miss a day with an ankle problem. And that's where Boras, you know, was kind of ranting throughout the process and even got to a point where he joked and he said, but other than that, I have no problem. The idea of which should hold more weight or which should be the thing that can either make or squash a deal. Should it just be someone throwing up an MRI on the screen and saying, oh, wow, that's a serious ankle injury.
Right.
Or should you say, well, yeah, it was 9 years ago.
Right.
He doesn't have any ankle problems now. He hasn't had any ankle problems. Doesn't mean he won't have ankle problems.
Sure.
Or should there be more weight to the day-to-day functionality and performance of a premium athlete who's been, quote-unquote, playing on this bad ankle for 9 years and has now put him in health position to get a $300 million contract by way of his performance on that ankle?
By throwing up a four to six WAR every year.
Okay, so then what it comes down to is, well, why, from the Twins' standpoint, were they willing to accept the risk with this ankle that the other teams weren't? And I think, well, A, it's less risk. It's half as long of a contract and, you know, two-thirds the money.
Right.
And they get additional value for them, sort of upside added to that risk with the team options and all that. Beyond that, though, they felt, having just spent an entire season with Correa, having seen him go into the trainer's room for other stuff, but not the ankle, having had their training staff and their doctor examine him last spring and again at the end of the season, not at the level of scrutiny that you would for a 13-year deal or anything, but there's no problem to examine.
Right.
That's the thing. Right. Like, people are like, well, why didn't the Twins see this? Well, the Twins did see this, but the Twins were signing him to what was essentially a one-year deal.
Right.
If he's healthy on that day.
And also, they didn't do an MRI on the ankle, because otherwise there would have been another MRI on the ankle. When they signed him to the original three-year deal, they're like, how's your ankle feel? It feels good.
Well, right. Yeah, right. He just finished top five in the MVP vote the year before. We're going to assume his ankle's probably okay. I mean, right. Here's the other thing. That ankle injury in 2014 is not hidden. There are major stories on ESPN about – I mean, he was the top prospect in baseball. Right. Everyone knew that he had the ankle injury. But so the Twins felt clearly, which Boris feels too, but he's biased. I mean, the Twins are biased to some extent too, but that there's you want to place more weight or more stock in the guy's performance, the fact that he hasn't been injured or suffered from this ankle problem at any point in the last 9 years, and the fact that we just spent 300 days with the guy in close quarters, having him go into the training room for, you know, maintenance things, or when he broke his finger, he thought he broke his hand, all this stuff we've been examining. No point did he say, yeah, my ankle's kind of bothering me too. And he, by the way, he was at his best in August and September.
Right.
There was no indication that he was hobbled or anything like that. And so that's going to be the disagreement here. The offshoot of that then is, was there anything sort of nefarious going on? I think particularly from the Mets' point of view, because this thing dragged out so long, and to have it drag out for 3 weeks and then ultimately end with them saying, we'll guarantee you half of what we said we'd pay you,
and
then you have to pass a physical, which is absurd, every season just to open the door for the next year of the deal. And I truly think what happened there was Correa – wanted to sign with the Giants, who, by the way, were offering him $65 million more than the Twins.
Yeah.
I'd want to sign with the Giants, too, in that case. That fell through. It was crushing for him. I mean, his family was incredibly excited. They immediately pivot to the Mets, which he was thrilled about, because his friend Francisco Lindor plays there. The Mets are throwing him around money. They're going to be. He's in New York, all this stuff. That was also $35 million more than, or $30 million more than the Twins offer. I'd take that deal, too. But then once that got bogged down, and once the lawyers entered the picture, and once, in my opinion, it became clear that the screws were being turned and the Mets were trying to turn this into the most advantageous situation for themselves that they could, Boris and Correa appeared to just reach a point at about 3 weeks where they just said, screw it. Give me back to Minnesota. And that's the exact quote that Correa said to Ken Rosenthal, which is, get on the phone with the Twins. I want to be back in Minnesota. Let's make that happen.
Right.
And that's ultimately what happened. And because of that process, and probably specifically because of how the Mets behaved in that process, the Twins then had leverage on their side, even if they didn't really create it.
Right.
It was just the situation. So the Twins didn't have to have their 10-year $285 million deal on the table.
Right.
In fact, they dropped it to 6 years and $200 million, and then got Correa's side to give them four team options, which carry no negative possibilities because they can get out of it essentially anytime they want, and could end up keeping him in Minnesota for four additional years, you know, 33 to 37 or whatever it is, the end of his peak, or the, you know, second tier of his peak, at prices that are, you know, average regular prices, not superstar prices. And so to me, yes, there's an incredible risk, and this ankle thing is unfortunately or rightfully going to loom over the rest of his career. It's just going to be constant. Anytime he slides, if he takes an extra 5 seconds to get up, people are going to be like, uh-oh, that ankle. And maybe those MRIs and the people who examine them are going to be proven right. Maybe a year from now, 2 years from now, 4 years from now, whatever it is, the deterioration of that ankle is going to become a major factor.
Or the pain will become a thing.
Whatever it is. Arthritic or whatever. Absolutely.
Right.
But in the meantime, the Twins got the player they wanted at a contract, both in terms of length and money and additional team options that they never would have imagined having.
Right. Exactly right.
At a level that they could not even in their wildest dreams, they never would have imagined this thing.
Yeah.
And so to me, risk, the weirdness of the saga, whatever, it's going to give people pause when they look at this. It's going to loom over this always until he gets through 6 years or 10 years healthy. But in the meantime, it's like, this is just such a no-brainer move for the Twins.
Yeah.
It, in the same way Correa, quote-unquote, fell into their lap last spring, the circumstances fell into their lap this time. But the difference to me, and Boris talked a lot about this, was Derek Falvey and Thad Levine, but especially Derek Falvey, never kind of took their fishing pole out of the water
right.
at any That's point. They maintained contact even when he it looked like he was going to the Giants. And not that they were tampering, but they checked in. Byron Buxton checked in as a friend. Right. Rocco Baldelli checked in as a friend. David Popkins, the hitting coach, checked in as a friend. It was never to pressure him.
Jose Miranda checked in as
exactly.
a friend.
Exactly. And Derek Falvey checked in constantly with Scott Boras, who Boras made a big deal about that. And the idea was, if there's a sliver of a chance that something's going to go wrong here, you know where to find us. Yep. You know where to reach us. And I give them credit for that because that I actually asked Falvey if he felt that his personality type was advantageous in this situation because, and I am an oversharer, so I said to him, if I were running the team, which is an absurd thing to say to him in general to start a sentence, I know. After the Giants thing, and certainly when the Mets thing happened, I would have said, screw this, I don't want to talk to them anymore.
All right.
And he said,
well, you'd have been the spurned lover.
Yes, exactly. Right. And he said, well, that's not my personality type. My personality type is to, you know, not close any doors.
Right.
But he said, yes, that is part of our approach to things, which is keep as many irons as in the fire as possible. Keep maximum flexibility. Keep all your options open. And that's something we've talked about. They let things play out much longer and further than Twins fans or people like me are comfortable with because they have confidence in their ability to pounce or swoop in when the opportunity presents itself. And so you can go, well, they lucked into this thing twice.
Right.
And it's like, no, not really. I mean, the circumstances had to be very specific.
They did luck into it. There's no question
weird,
about that. Right.
But they took advantage of it.
They also were prepared to get lucky.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
And the last thing, then we're going to talk about sponsor, but the last thing I'll say on that front is, at the beginning of this thing, or even in the early stages of this thing in December, what we talked about and what the Twins talked about was we think we have an inherent advantage because he spent a year here and he loved it. He loved everyone. You know, his family liked it here. He's friends with Buxton. He's friends with Miranda. He's friends with everyone. He liked playing for Baldelli. We treated him well, all this stuff. And people took that to mean the Twins are going to expect him to, you know, turn down 350 to sign for 285. That was right. never what they were saying.
Right.
Nobody's ever going to do that.
Right.
You're human. But what they thought was, if we can get it, for whatever reason, to a place where it's essentially all things equal, we believe that can be the tiebreaker. Now, in the first round of this thing, when you're getting offered $350 million and the Twins are offering $285 million, there's no amount of comfort in the world that's going to make up for $65 million. And even with the Mets thing, same thing. The Twins weren't going to raise their offer from $285. The Mets were supposedly coming in at $315, all that stuff. But when they found themselves in a circumstance where they could match the best offer, or it turned out, actually beat the best offer or beat the Mets offer of $157.5. The Twins came in at $200. Guess what? That was the – he could break the tie.
Yep.
The comfort level of returning to Minnesota, well, which probably became
– I would actually say more than better than breaking a tie because we did give them an extra $40 million that they didn't have. Right. Although ultimately, we were the high bid.
Although I will say that he can – this deal maxes out for Correa if every option vests.
Right.
At less 10 years and $270 million, he could have, if the Mets didn't try to get tricky, very easily top that in even like 8 or 9 years with the Mets. That's the way that deal was structured. It could still earn him $315.
Right.
And I would actually say it was probably likely to earn him at least $270, except that's only the case if you're confident the Mets aren't going to try to apply the screws again.
Right.
Before we get into sort of the domino effects of this thing and a few other tidbits from the press conference, let's real quick talk about our two sponsors. The first one is HelloFresh, which is meal delivery.
Have you had some HelloFresh recently?
I have, but even more than I just am constantly impressed by the pictures you post. That you guys are, it looks like you guys are like Gordon Ramsay and his wife over here or something like that. John and Chrissy.
It makes it easy, right? Here's one of the things that, listen, I've cooked all the time. Basically, ever since we got married, Chrissy likes planning the meals. I like cooking the meals, right? And so I've cooked since I was a line cook at Big Boy when I was 18 years old, right? but one of the things, cool things about HelloFresh, on top of, you know, it gives you exactly what you need, it gives you exactly the recipe that you need, it's got pictures, it's got, it can't make it any easier for you to do. They also have like all these little kind of touches, and such like, oh, you're going to make the chicken thing that you're gonna be making, but here's all this, you're also going to make this tiny little drizzle that you put on top of it, and also here's just a little package of some chives. And you're going to sprinkle that on top
Everything
of it.
Everything is perfectly portioned. Right? They send every ingredient.
And it all looks like a fantastic meal. Yes. Much better than the stuff
that
I've been cooking for 20 years because because I don't think about adding a little bit of parsley on the top. To, right. to make,
and
you know,
right? I will say that even for someone like me, our whole household, neither of us knows how to cook a damn thing. But it was even easy for us to make good meals that looked pretty good because they're right. giving you step-by-step instructions with pictures, which is very helpful.
Right.
When they're like, slice the ginger. And I'm like, what's ginger? It's like, oh, there's a picture of the ginger. Exactly right. So it was very helpful. And it's you can choose – if you're a vegetarian, if you're a meat eater, right. if you got kids, there's different menu options that you can choose and, each week.
And it becomes a fun thing to do together. It becomes a fun thing to do with your spouse. It's a fun thing to do with your kids. You can teach your kids how to cook a little bit before they leave the house. This is a good way to do it.
Here's the deal that our listeners can get. If you go to HelloFresh.com/Gleeman21, the number 21, and use the code Gleeman21, you get 21 free meals plus free shipping to give it a try. That's HelloFresh.com/Gleeman21. Use the code Gleeman21 and you get 21 free meals. It's HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit. And then our last sponsor for today is Native Deodorant.
Native Deodorant.
Which John has been using to great effect lately to the point that his wife will now sit next to him.
That's
again.
Exactly right, yes.
Native Deodorant is, first of all, smells great.
Yes.
Works great. And one of the big selling points is that it's using natural ingredients and they're laying out exactly what's in it. So you're not putting, you know, weird aluminum and all these other things that you're like, I don't know if this should be on my body. I don't know if I want this.
Right.
It's aluminum free deodorant. They keep their ingredients list, you know, basically bare with ingredients you understand, you know, coconut oil, shea butter, baking soda that you're not looking at. And you go, what even is that?
Right.
And they also have...
They also have a bunch of special... sometimes they have like special collections of stuff. And in fact, I think you're going to be getting one real soon here. I mean, they also have body wash and a bunch of other stuff, right? Their latest one is they've got a candy collection, essentially. Like one of the...
That could play well in my home.
One of the scents is taffy, vanilla taffy and strawberries or something. You know, the other one is like cinnamon hearts. I think I got you the cinnamon hearts. Oh, maybe I got you the vanilla taffy. I can't remember.
I can't wait for you to smell it, John. So you can smell and feel fresh all day with Native. You can get 20% off your first order by going to Native D-E-O, D-E-O like deodorant, nativedeo.com/Gleeman. Use the promo code Gleeman at checkout. That's nativedeo.com/Gleeman. Use the promo code Gleeman at checkout for 20%.
Check out their candy flavors. Hey, one follow-up on the sort of spurned lover aspect of the whole thing.
Never say the word lover again on the show. Please, John, let's outlaw that, please.
I've heard a couple of different things about we're the third choice.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I actually had somebody ask me, do you think the guys in the clubhouse are going to have the same reaction to him knowing that he was ready to leave them twice? Right. And I thought, this isn't Little League.
Right.
Like, it's not like I don't want to play with you. I'm going to go play with this other team instead. No, they were offering $65 million more.
I mean,
they were offering $35 million more. If I am Polanco and I'm like, yeah, he went someplace where he's going to make $35 million more.
Right.
Yeah, I'm not hurt.
I mean, they were
he was going to take
They
him.
Were the third choice because they were offering the third best contract.
Right.
What a coincidence that was.
That's right.
When the circumstances dramatically changed and then they were then offering the best contract, they became the first choice.
Yeah. And in fact, to the point where, you know, Boris said what Correa said in yesterday's interview, which was, I got back on the phone with Minnesota and I told Minnesota, I am not talking to other teams right now.
Right.
Now, whether or not that's really true,
because they did, it sounds like, have a few teams try to swoop back in,
right. I mean,
including
I
potentially the Giants.
I think the Red Sox also were one of these. There's a lot of stuff going on about that.
It opens the door for teams, much like the Twins did last spring, to say maybe he's gettable on a shorter, higher salary deal, a four-year deal or a three-year deal, averaging $40 million instead of a 10-year deal. Or something.
Well, I mean, I think that's a decent point that once you get to the point where, teams are like, hold it, for 6 years.
Right.
We were definitely interested in Correa.
But I think was a sense at that point. I mean, look, if someone would come in and offered him 8 years or even 6 years, 250 or something like that, maybe that changes things. But it definitely sounded like having been now spurned twice, he basically was done with it. And he said, I'm comfortable in Minnesota. Let's focus on Minnesota and try to make this done. And ultimately they did. And I also think Twins fans should realize there are no opt-outs or player options in this contract.
Right, yes.
He's in this for as long as the Twins want him to be in it, and there's a full no-trade clause.
Well,
this is structured in a way that limits the Twins' risk to 6 years.
Right.
But provides genuine upside to the Twins for keeping him around in year 7, 8, 9, and possibly 10. And as Boris pointed out, well, he just played a season in there. There's a very real possibility that he spends 11 years right. in Minnesota.
And makes $300 million.
And makes $305.1 million, right. which would, if you'd have said last spring, the Twins just signed him to an 11-year, $305 million, right. it would have avoided a lot of heartache and ended up in the same type of spot. right. But actually, it ended up in a much more advantageous spot for the Twins. Right. It just came at the expense of, you know, Carlos Correa's sanity.
Should also mention that one of the things, again, a lot of this is Boris spin. So let's just be very clear about this. But you know, what both Correa and Boris said was, at the beginning of this process, Correa gave Boris a list.
Yeah.
Here's the teams. That Boris said, here's the teams I'm going to be.
Unfortunately
interested
in. For me, it was a very limited list.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't want to go sign with 12 different teams. It was three or four, maybe five teams. Yeah. The Twins were on it. The Twins remained on it as other teams dropped off the list.
Right. And now I expect that list was something like, well, New York would be nice.
Yeah.
Chicago might be great. You know, I don't think it was.
Yeah. Same thing if I went home and right. said, Becky, where would you like to take a quick vacation? right. Those are the same places. Yeah, right. She didn't say.
San Francisco sounds good. LA, not bad.
She didn't say Milwaukee.
Houston. You know? Minnesota. You know, I'd be probably happy with any of those places. But so I don't want to. I guess what I'm saying is, you know, he's not back here kind of kicking and screaming. It's more like a, you know, he had a really nice relationship with this girl, and then he went and explored
don't do
a little
the
bit,
relationship
and then he gave with him a little exploring. Went, you know, I really liked what I had back there.
No, I think there's a comfort level, and I think the Twins offered him significantly more fully guaranteed money than the Mets were offering him, and I don't know if that's what it ended up being. Okay, so a few more. Just notes here. It was interesting to see. Look, nobody's going to cry for a guy who still ended up with $200 million. I'm not positioning it in that way. But to see his wife and his parents-in-law and the wife pregnant with a second boy coming,
right.
And to see all his friends and family there and to know that, A, they were all in a hotel room in San Francisco waiting to have their lives change, and the rug was pulled out from under them. And then they all spent Christmas and New Year's trying to get updates on this situation with the Mets that ended up feeling this way. There was, I think, a sense from Correa and from the Twins, too, that like there's a sigh of relief here from him that he could end up in a situation that is far from ideal for him and took a lot of ugliness to get there or weirdness to get there. But he didn't have to go to a team that he's never played for and wasn't comfortable with, that he ended up back
in place. Playing at the third base.
Right, which is a whole other issue. Let's see, a few other things. The Twins, it sounds like, will be getting insurance on the deal, which is interesting in that there was some thought that
is they're able to get insurance on the deal.
They're getting insurance
Okay, all right.
It sounds like, you know, initially people were like, well, if the Mets and the Giants wouldn't, he didn't flunk the physical. I've seen people say he flunked the physical. They just sort of pointed to that and said, we're not comfortable with that. Right. Like he didn't flunk the physical. I mean, he passed the physical. Wait. But there's also a whole nother level of medical examination required by the insurance company side of things. Right. They're not going to insure a $200 million or $300 million contract without feeling comfortable in it. I mean, that's just not good business. But he's been cleared on that front. So they'll get it at least partially insured.
We asked Boris a little bit about the insurance stuff, and he said, well, Twins were able to get insurance.
Right. Funny how that works.
You know, I think one of the concerns that had been raised was, well, are the Giants able to get insurance? Are the Mets able to get insurance? Like, well, the Twins were able to get insurance. I'm pretty sure the Giants and the Mets could figure out a way to get insurance.
Right. Let's see. There's a couple other things here. You know, The injury stuff is going to loom, obviously, but much like with Buxton last December when the Twins signed him to a 7-year, $100 million deal, the only way you could have kept Byron Buxton from free agency was because the injury lowered his value, market value or leverage, to the point that the Twins got him for what now is a laughably under-market deal, you know, $15 million a year. And it's similar now. You can say, if you're a Twins fan, well, this is awfully scary. There's a risk associated here. This is going to loom. I'm just going to constantly be looking at his legs and all that stuff. And that's all true. But you have to also realize if this were not an issue, he would have been in San Francisco already.
Right.
or at the very least in New York already.
Right.
And the Twins, A, would never have gotten him, and sure as hell wouldn't have gotten him for anywhere near the team-friendly terms or neutral terms that they ended up getting. And so it's a weird situation, and I know people are sick of injuries with the Twins in general. But the only way you get Byron Buxton for $15 million a year for his entire prime, and the only way you get Carlos Correa for a six-year deal –
right,
with the advantageous four option years after that, is to have circumstance play out where their market is dinged or their market is in jeopardy.
Right.
And so, you know, that's the trade-off you get. You can be worried about it, or you can not have the player on your team at all. Which would you rather have?
And I mean, I think
– time will tell, I guess.
We have talked a little bit over this last year. Do the Twins set themselves up for years like last year or years like the year before, where everybody ends up hurt because they kind of intentionally target people who have injury things? You know, if you think that's the case, well, then this is another example, right?
But the alternative is to just have worse players.
Right.
You know what I mean? Right. Like to not have access to that same level of players.
And I think you can debate which it's better, but, you know, that's it.
Correa and Buxton are now signed identically long guarantees through 2028, six full seasons together, which is a nice bit of, you know,
symmetry
there.
I mean, it also essentially is the Twins announcing we're going to be competitive for the next 6 years.
Yes. I mean, we talked about that last offseason and this offseason, the notion that there's just always going to be a certain segment of the fan base or the media who are just constantly pushing teams toward rebuild. Because it's an easy emotional place to be because you don't have to get upset about the current product.
That's right.
For the front office can stop spending money on the team, so they're into it. But we give them credit last time around and this time around for pushing forward with what they have, realizing that this is not a bad team on paper. It's a team that needs additions to be a good team and for doing it. But yeah, I mean, there's no way you sign Buxton to his deal and Correa to his deal, let alone like Christian Vasquez to his deal, and then a year from now rebuild. I mean, it's not feasible. It's also worth noting that there's always going to be when a deal like this, there's
and by the way, the Twins can't get out of those deals. They've got no trade clauses. Like they can't dump Correa. They can't dump Buxton. Well,
look, if they go 54-108 next year,
sure,
and Correa hates it, he can waive the no trade clause.
I suppose he can.
But there's been so much focus on, like you said, what percentage of the payroll is this? And people are worried that how can they, you know, didn't they learn from Mauer that you can't devote whatever percentage of payroll? Look, great players cost a lot of money. Great players acquired on the free agent market require a lot of years.
You either develop them or you have to buy them.
Right.
That's the way it works.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And the whole notion of, well, you know, they probably could have spent that $36 million they're going to pay Correa, you know, spread it around. Yeah. Is there any evidence of that being true in the last 30 years of sign three guys for $10 million is going to be better than Carlos Correa? Yes. It gives you more depth and you're in a less bad spot than if Correa got hurt.
Right.
But it's such an absurdity to act as if payroll flexibility, even in and of itself, helps a team. It only helps a team if it's spent in a way that helps the team. And one way that you can give yourself a pretty good chance to spend $30, $35 million in a way that helps the team is to sign a great player for that money and hope that he continues to be a great player, as opposed to signing Jay Happ and Angelton Simmons to play shortstop and bringing in Joey. I mean, like, you can spend $30 million on two, three players, but you're not guaranteed anything else beyond that. It's also worth noting that you have now Correa for 6 years guaranteed at an average of, what is that, 35 a year?
Yeah.
33 a year.
33 and a half.
And then you have Buxton for 6 years at an average of 15 a year. They're making roughly $48 million combined over the next 6 years. That seems like a lot for a team with $150 million payroll. But the only other player on the entire roster who is signed, who has a guaranteed salary beyond 2024, beyond next season, beyond 2 years,
is Vasquez.
Is Vasquez, who has a third year at $10
million. Right.
Those are incredibly clean books.
Right.
And the Twins are always going to have clean books because they sign a guy to a long-term deal.
Paddock now.
That's true, Paddock. You did break the news on that, Paddock. Although that's
there's one more.
That's the same thing. It's, right. It's
is Dobnik still around?
No, they can. By then they get out of it. Okay. But what I mean is, even if you were to maintain this level of payroll, which you would expect payroll to rise, but it's at 150 now, which is I think pretty solid. 3 years from now, they're going to be making $48 million. And your payroll is hopefully going to be $175 million, and you're still going to have plenty of financial flexibility. And you know what you will also have? Hopefully, two really good players around whom you can start to build the team.
Well, also, and one of those players, when we find out over and over, people keep repeating it, he wants to win.
Right.
Like, Correa is going to be pushing the front office to make moves. He is going to be pushing the ownership to afford those moves.
Right. Well, and I think that
he did not come here to just relax for 6 years. Yes. That's not his. That
and I wouldn't
not
be surprised if there were some sort of informal assurances along that front.
Yeah,
you know, they're not going to put anything in writing. But yeah, I mean, it's just logical. You're not going to do this move and shut the water. You know, the wallet.
There's nothing about Correa that suggests that he's going to come here and coast.
Well, I think that's true.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about this from just, you know, you could not sort of handpick a better face of the franchise. In terms of, A, he's a truly all-star and borderline MVP caliber player in his prime. But beyond that, he plays a premium defensive position well.
Right.
He's a middle order hitter. He's a guy who no one will be working harder on a day-to-day basis than him. No one will be taking more BP and more ground balls. But he's also a guy who becomes the connective tissue in the clubhouse. I mean, I see it every day when I'm in there, and people talk about it even beyond that, which is, he takes Jose Miranda under his wing. Uh-huh. He immediately befriends
when
Jose Byron
Jose Miranda says, I'm going to be taking a week of vacation next week.
Yeah, that was a funny story. Because Miranda has been, it sounds like, trying to get in better shape this offseason.
Yep.
And when he heard the news about this, they were chatting, I guess, and he said, well, I'm on vacation for a week. And Correa basically said, you know who's not going to be on vacation for a week? Me. I'm working out right now. So you're falling behind, basically. But there's that. And also, there's also just the literal face of the franchise in terms of media, which is, we talked about this before. I mean, ultimately, I don't give a crap if somebody talks to the media if they're a good player. Right. That's what matters. Right. But you do need, in this day and age, certainly, someone who is willing to step to the forefront in good times and in bad times and talk about the state of the team, talk about any difficult issues that came up. And Nelson Cruz filled that void for a long time really well. And Carlos Correa, you could not ask for someone who is more available and gives more thoughtful answers. And so I think, but also as
part of sort of the leadership of the team. You know what I mean? Like Nelson Cruz, it was nice that he would answer questions to the media, but also he would answer questions of the young players.
The
he would answer
house,
questions of the superstar players. He would say to superstar players, "You know, this is not the way you do this.
Right.
This is not the way how we're going to do it. Let's pay attention to what to
you
the
need
details.
Someone
here.
To set a tone, and you can do that by example, which Buxton does often.
Right. Yep.
And you can do that, which, by the way, Correa also does.
Right, exactly.
That's the ideal, obviously. Right. I mean, the ideal is to – and Kevin Garnett talked about this when he returned to the Wolves when he was a shell of his former self. And he said, I can still lead in some of the same ways I did for my entire career. I can be the guy who calls out stuff that isn't right. I could shout at a guy to practice harder. Right. But you lose a little something when you're no longer the best guy on the team or when you're a bench player. You can be a leader as a bench player. Sure. It's just a little bit more difficult.
Right.
But the ideal is the best player on the team is the hardest working player on the team who leads by example, and he's also the guy who can be the straw that stirs the clubhouse drink and get people in line, keep people in line.
And doesn't denigrate the 23rd or 24th or 25th or 26th.
I think the opposite is true of that. I mean, he seems to really go out of his way, and they joke about his sort of level of expertise about the
and
farm system.
And how different
system.
It is from some other players that were supposed team leaders.
But, I mean, when a guy gets called up from St. Paul, he knows all about him because he's sitting there reading Baseball America and The Athletic. and in the Rosenthal interview with him last night, Rosenthal said, hey, we had a story. It was by Dan Hayes. But he said, we had a story about you and Buxton staying in contact throughout all this. And Correa said, oh, I read that. And I'm like, congrats, he's an Athletic subscriber. But he is one of these guys who is a baseball nerd, which you don't often find in guys who are actually great at baseball.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? And I'm sure that's the same in every sport. But I had several instances during the season where I walked up to him wanting to write about something analytical. And I would start off with something slightly less nerdy than I eventually wanted to get to, because I wanted to feel him out. And inevitably, 3 minutes into our conversation, he's talking about stuff that I don't even know.
Right.
He's talking about not exit velocities and launch angles, but he's talking about like force plate, you know, pounds that he puts in for his legs and all this. And I'm just like, yeah, this, I'm talking about baseball savant. You're talking about some info that we don't even have access to. And so I think there's value in all that stuff, which all wrapped together, in addition to being a great player, is what makes the Twins comfortable. Because, I mean, let's leave no doubt. Like, I think this is a very good contract for the Twins, given the situation. And I think it's as the most you can limit risk in a scenario like this. But there's still tremendous risk. So you say, well, why is this the guy that they finally, you know, made this leap? It's double, basically, the previous – more than double if you don't count the Correa deal, the previous biggest free agent contract they've ever handed out in team history. Why is this the guy? Well, this is the guy because, A, this is these circumstances had to happen for them to have access to one of the, you know, 15 best players in the world.
Right.
And B, he checks every possible box that could make you feel comfortable with we're going to make a decade-long commitment to this guy. I mean, think of not a Josh Donaldson situation where – right. I'm not saying Josh Donaldson's a villain or anything, but there are personality types where you go, we want this person to be at the head of the team for 8 years or 10 years. And I think there's no such worry with Correa. And also, he talked about, because he was asked, you know, there's a sense that this is the third choice and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. He said, look, I'm here now. I'm going to be here for at least 6 years and hopefully a total of 11 years. My family's going to be here. My kid's going to be Minnesota Nice, he said. Right. Like, I'm going to focus so much on this team. And he said, I'm going to play hard every day. I'm going to be active in the community with my family. To me, that's, if you're a Twins fan, you can obsess about, were we the first choice? Were we the what? If that's your number one prerequisite, you're never going to sign a great free agent. There's never, unless some guy's from Minnesota, Joe Mauer, if he would have been a free agent. But other than that, and even then, I mean, you're never going to have a guy.
The reason they signed him a year before he became a free agent is because they were pretty sure he wasn't going to be coming back here as a free agent.
Let me lay this out in the most simple terms. There's never going to be a superstar athlete from Puerto Rico who just spent the last 8 years in Houston who becomes a free agent and says, get me to Minnesota under any circumstances. So if that's your prerequisite for doing this, you're never going to get a great player like that.
We mentioned that we just had a Patreon with Dan Hayes on it, right? The previous time we had Dan Hayes on the Patreon, the discussion turned into, could you find a more perfect fit for the Minnesota Twins than Carlos Correa?
Right.
And it was, can they actually, like, we know it's absurd that they're going to chase and get Correa, but we would all argue, and we all did argue, you chase. You
even if
don't,
it's 1%.
You don't back away now.
Right.
You don't back away just because he's the top free agent. You go get him because he showed over the last year what a great fit he was, not just because they need a really good shortstop and he's a gold glove shortstop, not just because they need a top of the order bat and he's a top of the order bat, but also because of how well he was in the clubhouse with the media, with the younger players, mentoring all the other Latin players that are out there. Like, across the board, he checked every box. And so I know it's absurd, but let's go and try and sign this guy for 10 years and $300 million.
Right.
Like, I know that's crazy. Right. I know that's something the Twins would never, ever do, but let's do that. That was the conversation we had two and a half months ago with Dan Hayes, right? And now that we've got him, I think it's worth remembering that is why they went out and did that. Well, and did this absurd thing. Absurdly,
we're chasing
the top free agent against the Giants and the Mets and Steve Cohen at $400 million payroll, right?
Right. Yeah, and that's what I wrote my initial thing the day after this news broke early in the week, which is there are risk components here. There is an ankle thing that's going to loom until proven otherwise. There's the idea of that, which plays into Minnesotans' insecurity in general, the chip that's on Minnesota's shoulder as a, you know, flyover country or whatever in general, which is we want to be wanted. We want people to say, oh, this is Minnesota's actually great.
We were wanted. We were on the short list.
Don't forget the feeling that you had when you saw this news come across on Twitter or the scroll on ESPN or whatever it was. or when you saw the podcast pop up that we recorded. Don't forget the feeling of that, because this is a feeling of, oh my God, they actually got him?
Right.
That Twins hands not only have been waiting for 10 years or 20 years, but essentially have been waiting since 1961. I mean, it's never been.
Right.
This has never happened in the history of the Twins. And I'm going to say something now. It may never happen again. Right. And so my thing is, no matter if you're pessimistic about this ankle, if you don't think it's worth the money, whatever that – if you're – even if you're someone who said, I wouldn't have signed this deal, which I can't – that logic escapes me. But even if that's your stance – I would say still, if you're a Twins fan, and especially if you're a lifelong, you know, multi-decade Twins fan, still don't forget the feeling of this,
right,
because this is a truly unique feeling. This is a feeling that Yankees fans get a lot. This is a feeling that Red Sox and Dodgers and Giants fans get a lot.
Right.
But this is a feeling that has literally never existed right, for Twins fans at this anywhere right, near this level.
Wild fans got it a little bit 10 years ago.
Right. I mean, there's right, versions right, of this. Right. But my thing is, like, even if you think this is the biggest mistake the Twins have ever made, which I do not think, at least take the whole thing in and say, this is what it feels like
right,
for the baseball team you root for to go out and spend huge money on a great free agent and actually land them.
Right.
And you can get obsessed with the circumstances. You can get obsessed with the injury and the risk and all that.
Or the journey that it got him here.
But right, there's room for that. And there's also room to just sit there and go, I cannot believe that this just happened. And that's sort of, I think, how the Twins felt. I mean, that's right, kind of the vibe that Derek Fulvey himself, he was I would describe him as ecstatic on the day. There's a couple other just very small notes, and then we'll get out of here, because there's like a whole group of people.
There's a party that's waiting to come out, I think, put all their party supplies in
they
here.
Look mean too. They look mean too. One of the other things we talked about is the idea of you don't just stop with this. It makes no logical right, sense to stop with this. And what I would say is, the Twins should be more motivated now, right, not less motivated, to make further moves. And by that, I don't mean they should go out and try to trade for some, you know, another superstar player. I mean, that'd be great. But what I mean is, they are, A, committed to trying to win in the present by these moves, by the Correa move. But beyond that, they're in a sweet spot here where, you know, they're not
adding a couple wins right, really means
they're
something.
They're not projected.
They're going to be projected for about 85, 86 wins right now. 86 wins was the last team that got into the postseason last
right,
year.
That
was the race.
Now that
right,
you have six teams that get in every year, right, there's three division winners. Right. You're in a weak division where 90-something usually wins the division. Right. And you're in a circumstance where somewhere between 85 and 88 wins will probably secure one of the three wild card spots. Right. Well, their initial projection a month ago was about 81 wins. Right. Now it's going to be about 85, 86 wins. They are in a spot where every win you can add at this point, projected win, on paper win, has the maximum possible impact. You know, the Dodgers don't need to sign a decent middle reliever for $6 million because they're going to win 100 games no matter what. The Pittsburgh Pirates don't need to sign a decent backup outfielder for $8 million because they're going to win 72 games no matter what. Right. But when you're sitting in that sweet spot where every win added or subtracted is taking a big dent out of your playoff odds or right, raising your playoff odds significantly, I would argue that they should be trying to add another reliever. They should be trying to add a right-handed outfield bat. They should be trying to make upgrades or even bring in additional depth right, around the margins of this team. Because even if you were from this point until opening day, if you could add two projected wins, you're basically doubling your playoff odds at that point. You're right, putting yourself from kind of a borderline right, contender in the middle of the pack to
giving yourself that much more of a buffer.
So that's what I'm curious to see, because I mean the free agent market.
We should mention just as part of this, this basically move basically gets them their payroll to where it was last year.
Yeah, it's at 150 more or less. Yeah.
Is it that high?
Yes. Okay. It's 140 something and change. But yeah. But
they can free up some money by moving Kepler.
Right. That's right? $8.5 million they could free up by moving Kepler.
Right.
And you know, year over year your payroll should be going up. Yeah. I mean, they're 17th right now. Out of 30 teams in projected payroll, do you know where they finished last year in projected?
17th.
Yes.
17th. The year before?
17th. I think it was 17th or 18th.
It's been like 17 like 3 years in a row.
That's,
right,
that's where they're at. They're right at, you know, dead average, that's basically. The one other thing I wanted to say. Well, so yeah, the free agent market is pretty much tapped out right, here. Andrew McCutchen just went back to the Pirates yesterday. Right. AJ Pollock signed elsewhere. you know, there's guys, you know, you could re-sign Michael Fulmer as a reliever. I still think someone like Trey Mancini or Adam Duvall as a right-handed outfield bat would make a lot of sense, particularly because they DFA'd Kyle Garlick to make room on the 40-man roster. Yeah. For Correa, they're hoping to stash him at AAA still, but we'll see how that plays out. There are these kind of marginal moves, and none of them are necessarily going to, you know, get big headlines and people to go, oh my God, they got Correa and then they got, you don't go, oh my God, they got Correa and then they got Trey Mancini. But if Trey Mancini is one win better than Kyle Garlick or one win better than whatever the alternative, if Michael Fulmer is one win better than whoever the worst reliever is, then you've gone from an 86 win projection to an 87 win projection. And guess what? On September 30th, when you're two games out of the wild card spot, that's going to seem very important. So I hope, and it's going to probably have to come via trade. I do think there are going to be – I would guess – there. I would put it at 1.5 trades that bring in a major league player. Let's put it that way. Okay. From here to opening day, I think there will be multiple of them. But we'll see. I mean, I've been predicting a Kepler trade for about 20 years now. I'd
put it at 0.5, but I'd take the under on the 1.5. We'll see.
0.5, I'll take over for whatever you want to – whatever action you want to take. I'll go to – I'll bring in people to invest in that. The last thing I want to say, just in terms of a domino effect – We got a lot of questions about what this means for Royce Lewis, what this means for Brooks Lee, and what this means for Austin Martin. Because those are, in my mind, I just put out my prospect ranking, the number one, number two, and number five prospects in the Twins system. I think I'm a little higher on Martin still than most people. But, you know, it's three out of their top ten. I would argue three of their top five prospects are all quote-unquote shortstops. Martin played shortstop at AA all last season. Royce Lewis played shortstop for St. Paul and for the Twins last season. And then Brooks Lee played shortstop in college and played shortstop at high A in his debut. So you go, well, what are they going to do with those guys? Because now they just signed one of the best shortstops in the world for 6 years and possibly 10 years.
Right.
Well, you got to be realistic about prospects. There's no such thing as too many shortstop prospects. I think we've had this conversation every 5 years or so.
We do,
it used to be with Wander Javier, Jorge Polanco, and Nick Gordon.
Right.
And now none of them are major league shortstops.
Exactly, right.
And the way it plays out is you have to say, well, first of all, Austin Martin, who I still think can be a very good player. I have not talked to one evaluator with the Twins or with another team who is confident that he is capable of playing shortstop every day in the majors. He was never going to wind up as the Twins starting shortstop. So that doesn't change anything for him. Brooks Lee was a college shortstop, but is not the most athletic guy, and they think there's some more physical growth in terms of adding power and all that. There are some people who think he can be a shortstop for a few years in the majors and hold his own there, but from the moment he was drafted, I had people saying he's going to be a great third baseman. Right. Or he could play second base if you wanted, but he was likely to wind up there. Maybe this eliminates what other slim chance he had of being the Twins starting shortstop someday. But ultimately, if you have him at third base next to Carlos Correa, that's a really good outcome. Now, Royce Lewis is the one for whom this changed the most because we've already seen him play shortstop for the Twins for, you know, 10 games or a dozen games, whatever it was. But I will tell you that even before his first knee injury, there were people who went, he can be a decent shortstop, but I actually like him better in center, or I actually like him better at second, or I actually like him better. There was a sense that he could be a passable, kind of adequate major league shortstop. Well, then he blows out his knee, and that's in question. I thought he came back well and looked good at shortstop, both at St. Paul and for the Twins, but then he blew out his knee again. I mean, the notion that you can count on Royce Lewis coming off back-to-back torn ACLs, and given what was not an elite defensive profile at shortstop to begin with, count on him being a 10-year solution at shortstop is just not realistic. So I do think this eliminates whatever chance Royce Lewis had of being the Twins opening or, you know, long-term shortstop, and maybe that's something that frustrates him. But I think there was at least a 50-50 chance, and possibly higher than that, that he was never going to wind up as a, you know, 5 or 10-year shortstop. And again, if you have Correa at shortstop and Brooks Lee at third and Royce Lewis at second, or even Royce Lewis playing left, and some short, and some center, or bouncing around, I mean, that's still a great scenario. And so I mean, wouldn't...
Certainly, you're going to plan on starting the Gold Glove shortstop at shortstop the next year, next maybe
at some
couple
point,
of years, et cetera.
Correa himself is going to shift to third base.
Right, exactly right.
3, 4, 5 years from now, and then you're going to need a shortstop. But it's not going to be a Jordan Love backing up Aaron Rodgers situation where they're going to try to keep Royce Lewis at AAA for 5 years until Correa. They're going to find a play. If these prospects are legit offensively and defensively, and I think they will be, you can always find a place for shortstops. Right. I mean, Falvey said this the other day. He basically said, if you can play shortstop, you can play anywhere on the dirt, which is baseball speak for the infield. And with Lewis and with Martin especially, there are people in the organization who think they could be above average center fielders and elite left fielders.
Well, also, I mean, Polanco at second base is under contract through 23. And now they've got team options on 24 right. and 25. But, you know, maybe at some point they decide, you know, right. let's move Lewis over there and maybe we move Polanco. Maybe we want the $10 million that he's going to get paid in 24 or whatever.
I think the ideal scenario is, let's say 2 years from now.
Right.
You know, this time 2 years from now, we're prepping for the 2025 season. If we're not both retired by then. You got Correa at shortstop. You got Brooks Lee at third. You got Royce Lewis at second. And you got Jose Miranda at first or at DH. Kirilloff maybe is at first. That to me is a pretty appealing scenario yeah. there. Are they playing their primary position? Are they fully maxed out in terms of the furthest up the right. defensive spectrum that they can get? Right. No, but that's not such a great thing anyway.
Also, just be nice to have a lot of really good defensive players in the infield. Well, you know what yeah. I mean? Like, four shortstops going around the infield might work pretty well.
Okay.
We should just kind of lay out for the next week here what we're going to be looking at.
Yes. So, as we talked about, we did an immediate Correa reaction podcast, and then we did a follow-up really in-depth behind the scenes, a lot of details we didn't even get to today that I think you will, if you liked this past right. hour or so, you will love the talk we had with right. Dan Hayes, which is the archives are always available for right. free. You can go test it out.
You go sign up right now. Patreon. You get to listen to both of those episodes immediately for absolutely nothing. Right. And then on Monday, you might have some questions coming from this. Well, Monday, we're going to be doing a mailbag. It's going to be an all Correa mailbag yeah. pretty much.
For Patreon right. subscribers only.
Right.
It's P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com/Gleeman to sign up. Then we got a special guest lined up
right.
that we've now pushed back because of Correa news right. once. But yes. hopefully, well, we'll see. There
and
might be a trade.
And if there's new breaking news, we'll be doing another emergency podcast. Well,
and here's the thing.
And this is going to be a fun season.
We're a month
like the
out.
The whole offseason changed.
1 month from today, pitchers and catchers
right.
will be in spring right. at spring training, I believe. Right. If you sign up right now and stick with us through spring training, it'll cost you like an extra $6 or something like that right. than if you exactly just started right. in the middle of spring training. So
you're going to love it.
If you want more Twins talk, if you want breakdowns of any further moves that are coming, if you want to have your questions answered in a mailbag segment, we would really love to have you join us. And right. I will say that we've added about, I don't know, 800 new people in right. the last 72 hours. Right. So if you're kind of feeling, well, I don't know, it seems like a thing, but you're not alone yeah, here. Yeah,
3,600 people now are doing this.
Right. We would love to have you join us, patreon.com/Gleeman. And if not, we like having you listen to this show, too. That's cool. We'll be back roughly 1 week from, today to break down
I think
whatever happened in the meantime.
Yeah, I think the agenda for a week from today is going to be all the little pieces of news, because there was a lot of them, actually, this last week that we didn't cover.
Yeah, we didn't talk about Chris Paddock.
DFA people and all this other stuff. All the stuff that's happening next week, we're going to catch up on 2 weeks' worth of small notes. But if you want the Correa talk, go grab that. Go just sign up for the Patreon. Listen to the past couple episodes. You don't think it's worth it? Get out.
All right. Yeah. We got to go. Bye.
Bye-bye.